Hey guys, this is Sharad, host of the Recently podcast. I have a very, very special guest today on the show, Jonathan Green. We just did a mastermind call about an hour ago, which was absolutely fire. There was like so much amazing content there. So I cannot wait to get into the podcast with Jonathan. Welcome, Jonathan, to the Recently podcast. How are you?
Yeah, Sharad, nice seeing you again. We're spending our whole afternoon together. But yeah, I love that mastermind. And yeah, I'm excited to be on the show here.
Absolutely. It was absolutely an amazing call. One of my favorite calls. You had so much information to share. But before we get into that, why don't you just share a little bit background about yourself, who you are, where do you live, what kind of investing do you do?
Yeah, thanks. My name is Jonathan Green. I've been investing my whole life. Some people think that sounds like a story, but it's not. My dad was an investor, and I've been walking foreclosed homes for 47 years since I was 5 years old, because that's the first time I can remember being in a foreclosure. So he used to, you know, before the internet, we got lists from the courthouse. He would push me through the window if they were vacant. I would open the door because they were locked. This is how you did it in the old days. Like, modern people are like, that's trespassing. I'm like, nah, this is just how you got the job done before. So my dad was an off-market investor, but he was an attorney, as am I. So I kind of grew up always doing real estate investing on the side of my other businesses. I worked for 10 years as a trial attorney, as a prosecutor, and then a criminal defense attorney. I ended up going into the art world for 6 years, then into teaching, and then I got my real estate license. I've been licensed and run a big team in multiple states. I've done that for 10 years, but it's always been a cross-pollination with investing. And I've done every type of investment really that there is. So I have a kind of wide asset class knowledge. And I have a podcast as well called Zen and the Art of Real Estate Investing, where we talk about the mindful approach to real estate investing, which is really my thing and part of my journey, which is working on myself, understanding what I'm good at, what I'm not good at, and then putting it at play in investing. And I think that's what a lot of people are missing. They're forgetting that they have a special set of skills, even if they're not sure what they are yet. And you have to figure out what those are to use your abilities to be the best at investing. And that doesn't mean it's what, you know, mirroring somebody on social media, because they may not share the same skill set as you do.
And then you've done all kinds of investing. You've done wholesaling, flipping, rentals.
I never really did wholesaling. I did off-market acquisition. I just didn't wholesale. I would do the wholetail, which is buying myself and then reselling, or just direct. I was doing marketing for myself. I never wholesaling. I think can be done extremely well, but I think I could help everyone wholesale better by doing it a little more mindfully and not doing everything the same way. But yeah, my biggest asset over my whole life has been single family houses, some that I lived in and did really well on, which is an unfound asset class, actually getting enjoyment out of a property. I was doing short-term rentals with my sister more than 20 years ago before Airbnb, in the Hamptons and in California and in Florida. I've done a lot of flips in my life. I really like flipping. The numbers just haven't been super for New Jersey, where I am, the last couple of years. I've owned commercial properties, industrial parks, and I've attempted to buy things like self-storage, but haven't been successful. But I've researched all the classes, and now I'm investing in some syndications here and there and looking for things that are truly a little more passive, so I can spend time, you know, working on the podcast, growing my regular business, and just kind of enjoying my life, which is what most people listening are after.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you've mentioned this couple of times, mindful approach to investing. Tell us a little bit more about what that is. Mindful approach, different from what you see investors doing.
Well, I grew up as like, I was kind of, I've had a rigid personality, didn't realize where it came from until later, but I think I was just like hard on everything, that there was a black and white to everything that was going to be easy. And then when I was in my 40s and running one of my, I think my second real estate team, I just found myself being kind of a pawn to the game. I was allowing way too much access. My phone was ringing all the time. And I wasn't like just being the best parent I could be. I was like too busy at work. So I basically, after one phone call, stopped, shut it all down for a year, dropped my license, stopped investing. You know, I focused on the investments that I had. And all I did for a year was read books, work on myself, and kind of learn more about what my skill set was. And I think that transformed the way that I looked at investing going forward. Like, to me, the mindful approach is knowing that the biggest power you have as an investor is in cash, it's your ability to walk away or your ability to say no, because everybody in a hot market thinks their property is the best. But the second you tell them, I don't need it, they're like, wait, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Because there's so many new investors who kind of have a desperate FOMO mentality and to buy everything. And because of my background as a lawyer, I'm a very good negotiator, and negotiating real estate is almost like silly to me because I was negotiating life and death, you know, long prison sentences. So to me, I use the skills that I had to try to figure out a way where both parties can win. And that's really part of the mindful approach in everything I do. Can everybody be okay walking away from the table? Because I feel like real estate should be collaborative and not competitive, especially between investors. There's properties everywhere. They just maybe aren't on the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, there's a certain power to walking away from a property. We're negotiating a property where we had the seller on our drip campaign like for about 9 months, a year, something like that. And he came back, he's saying, hey, I'm interested in selling. But it turns out, you know, we had talked about this in our mastermind call.
Yeah.
This seller was trying to get multiple offers, like have multiple people. And we just said, hey, you know what? We don't want to get into this game. When you're serious about selling the property, let us know. And then, you know, we can talk about our offer. We had actually sent him a written purchase agreement through eSign. We pulled it back. We said, we're going to retract our offer. It was just so empowering, rather than saying, hey, what did you decide? What did you say? No, we're not going to play these games. You know, if that's what you want to do, go ahead, do that. But when you're serious about selling, let us know. Do you notice that happening with sellers?
I go even a step further. So I say, if you use my offer and shop it to get other offers, I'm going to pull it. And then when you want it again, it's going to be 10,000 less. And I'll never change my mind. And that, because I don't need it. I want it. It's a nice property. I like it. But if you're going to play around, then I'm not going to play around, like you're saying. So I will never go back to the number. There's a 0% chance. And I've won deals on that. I've definitely lost deals and then watched them sit there for another 3, 4, or 5 months. I've had multiple negotiations recently on off-market buildings, or actually they were on the market that I was buying, where the sellers, we'd get close to closing and they just started to be unreasonable. And the one seller just wanted to cancel. And I'm like, okay. You know, they found a reason. We were trying to still negotiate repairs very close to closing on a chimney repair. And anyone who gives me an option to get out, I'll get out, because they're not the right match. And then it took them another year and a half to sell, you know, so, and the people just are not trying to work together. They're trying to hide the ball or be dishonest or to squeeze the most out of the juice. But I know better than them what they have in their house. So when I'm telling them, this is why I'm making the offer I have, you have a structural problem. That structural problem is going to make every inspection with a first-time home buyer fail. They're never going to buy your house. It's a major structural problem. I'll do the structural work and I have cash, P.S. So you're going to agree to first-time home buyers, which is popular in my market. A lot of unsavvy first-time home buyers are buying what we would used to consider more renovation properties, because they're desperate and there's nothing on the market and they don't know how much things cost and they have bad agents. But I'll explain to them, this is exactly what's going to happen. And in 14 days, you're going to be back after the home inspection. You're going to be back on the market and no one's going to be there. But when you come for my offer, it's going to be less, and don't ask for any more. And I did win one and flipped it and made a good amount of money on it. But they were almost mad coming back to me. They said, how can you not give us the money? I'm like, I told you I wasn't going to give you the money. Like, why are we in dispute? I'm acting straight up. You're not acting straight up. You went, took the risk to see if it was going to happen. And exactly what I told you was going to happen happened. So now here we are.
Yeah. I love your approach in marketing also, that you're very, very honest. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the mindful approach that you have. Like, you're very, it's not, what do you call it, like spray and pray. You don't do that. It's very targeted marketing. Let's talk about that and how that's made you a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like a differentiation principle. If everybody's doing one thing, I'm always going to do the other thing, but I also want to figure out like what they're doing wrong. So if I just look at general, this is obviously a complete generalization, but it will hold true. The overall marketing for off-market properties has traditionally been, if you just go back to bandit signs, they all say the same thing: buy your house quick for cash. 99% of those people don't have the cash to buy the home. They're using hard money or another source. So the sign is a lie. Some people do. If you have the cash, great, but not everyone's going to use the cash. So if you go, like, the majority of wholesalers, the reason I have a problem is that they're lying. not all of them, but when you have someone who's working for a wholesaler who's on site writing a contract that they know is going to be assigned and they're not really going through how they're going to make money on the spread in the middle, the seller's eventually going to get mad at the end when they see that there's a spread. So if you explain everything up front, you're going to have a much smoother process. You're also going to be able to, it's like, why are wholesalers always not telling me how much they're making when they're sending me a wholesale deal? It's not going to change anything. If you're making 40 grand and it's a good deal for me, like, okay, that's fine. Good deal by you. You did a good job. But if you won't tell me, I'm going to find out at the closing, unless we're doing a double blind close, or you're going to close first and not us close again. So like, to me, transparency is a mindful thing, because what does everybody want? They'd actually like to feel that they can trust you. And off-market real estate is littered with untrustworthy activities, not necessarily people. They're kind of doing what they can to get a deal, but I don't feel like they're doing it the right way. And I think if they would just focus and be more honest about how the process is going to work or what their funding is, if you have hard money, awesome. Explain how hard money works, because that has a limited appraisal. It's not cash. Those are not the same things. Anything that has an appraisal is not cash. Cash has no appraisals.
And I think another thing you mentioned earlier was in the other call that I was doing, that if you're doing hard money and you have 13% interest rate, talk to the seller. You know, they, hey, I'm willing to buy this house with the 13% interest. That's how much I love the house. Use that to your advantage. I think that was like absolutely brilliant advice.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Because think about it. Most people are embarrassed to say that they don't have the cash, but you don't have the cash. You're using somebody else's money and you have to pay a premium to get it. So why can't you use that to your advantage? Like you said, what we were talking about was disclosing, like, listen, I want this house so much, I'm willing to pay 13% and 2 points, you know, and then you explain to them what points are. And then the people are like, wow, no one's ever told that to me. It's like, yeah, it looks like cash. It's not cash. The appraisal's not hard, because it's an ARV appraisal. Like, this is how it works. Those people will trust you. It's just that general coaching for wholesaling is to be quicker and turn more deals, but that's not money efficient for a lot of new wholesale. That isn't going to grow you a good long-term reputation and a bunch of relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it becomes even more important in the day and age that we live in, where it's so easy to pull a list, skip trace, call them and text them. It's become even more important to provide personalized service to the homeowner, add value to them. Don't think of it as like a number on your whiteboard that you're trying to reach, but think how you can add value to the seller. And then you have a very interesting letter that you do, or very interesting way you reach out to the homeowners in your local area. Just walk us through a little bit about that. You know, what do you do? What do you say to the seller?
Yeah, I mean, I have a few different letters that we've given different names over the years, but the one, if you're someone who likes absentee homeowners as a target, then you would use the concerned citizen letter. It's a true approach to get people to call you back, but you have to be honest to the process. My letters don't work for people who aren't going to do it the right way. That's why I can freely tell everyone. One, I know 99% of people aren't going to do it. If they did it, it would work, but it takes more work to get it done. It's not easy. And it's just, you know, you have to live up to the expectations. So the letter would go something like, Dear Mr. Smith, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I walked by your property at 123 Main Street today on my normal walk that I do every day with my dog going through. I actually noticed that the house might not be in as good shape as you think. Because I do my due diligence, I looked up the address on public records. I see that you live in California and you only have this property in New Jersey. I walk by it every day. I'm happy to send you an update every month. But here's a couple photos of what it looks like now. Your gutters are hanging off. There's a leak in the roof. I don't know if you have a tenant there or what's happening. But, you know, again, I'm local. I'm happy to help you. P.S. If you are ever interested in selling, I am looking to invest in this area because I live here and I love the neighborhood. You know, give me a call anytime. The chances of getting a call back on that are like at least 100 times higher than I will buy your house quick for 100%. Cash. Because they're an absentee owner who's owned it 10 years. They're getting 100 letters a day.
Right.
Because people run the same lists.
Yeah. And then this is truly, truly personalized to that homeowner. It's not the same letter, same postcard going out to thousands of people.
How can you get any more personalized than sending them a picture of the house that you're in front of? If you want to double it up, you take a selfie with yourself in front of the house, which I do all the time. And then they're like, name me one person who's going to take a photo of themselves in front of their house pointing to where the gutter's leaking. If you do that, you're going to win. Might one in 10 people think it's creepy? Maybe, but you live in the neighborhood. And if they ever questioned it, I would send them my property tax record. You know, if you're telling the truth, you have nothing to hide from. That's what's important. You can have a business as an LLC, but nobody wants to sell to an LLC. You're not helping yourself buy properties by hiding behind it. You have to be front and center if you're the person doing the appointment. If they're going to meet me, I want them to know that it's me and I care about them. I don't want to be best friends, but I want to find a scenario where we both feel like, hey, this deal went well for both of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think absolutely brilliant about your approach is, you know, you see a lot of investors saying, hey, I understand you're going through these issues, divorce, whatnot. And they're using that to negotiate on a lower price. You're not doing that. You're just literally coming as, hey, I'm concerned about your property. Maybe you don't know what your property looks like, but here's, you know, you may need to fix the gutters. You may need to fix the roof. The windows may need some work done to them. And you just say, yes, if you're looking to sell, I may be interested, but you're not saying, oh, by the way, these are everything that's wrong. You know, now can we talk about the price, which puts the seller in a very defensive situation. You're not doing that. And then the approach you're taking, you're getting people, yes, you know, if you don't mind, can you please send me an update like once a month? Like, who would say no to that?
Exactly. Well, that's it. That's a Hormozy thing. If you can make an offer that is impossible to say no to, it's not going to cost them anything. And I walk right by the house. You don't want a picture? If anyone disputes it, I say, are you sure? Because I'm just going to click a picture on my phone and I'll text it to you once a month on the same day, like clockwork, at the same time. And I'm regimented. Yeah. I will always send it at the same time because that builds trust. It's going to be the first of the month at noon. I'm going to be there. I'm going to shoot the photo. If for some reason something comes up, I'll tell them it's going to be 3 p.m. this month. If you do that, they'll trust you. But also what you said is important. I'm trying to build this level of trust where I'm not really hiding anything from them. Like, they know that it's me and I'm trying to come in and make a fair deal with them that will make sense to both parties. It's just, there's a lot of coaching around the business that is more, I guess, focused on scaling, but most people aren't ready to scale. You know, you can't scale if you've done one deal or two deals and you made like $4,000. That's not a good time to scale. You have to understand your skills, you know, your skills, what you're good at and what's going to make the business grow. And the one-to-one touch of making people respond to you and then getting in a conversation and then not making it all about real estate is always the way to win.
Yeah, you see too many people trying to build a skyscraper without even building the foundation.
Right, you know, house of cards. That's a house of cards.
Exactly. And then, you know, you and I talked about it earlier that people are so focused on vanity numbers. Hey, I want to do 50 deals a year. I want to do 7-figure in revenue. That's all they're focused on, but they don't look at how much money they want to make. You and I both agree. I would much rather have like $600,000-$700,000 business and make $300,000-$400,000 net profit on that than have a 7-figure business and only making $50,000-$100,000. What's the point of having that business? You have so much overhead, so much headache that you have to deal with versus running an absolutely lean and efficient business.
Yeah, and lean and efficient means you're getting time freedom in advance before you have financial freedom. It's the same reason why people lease a Ferrari. I mean, you can't afford the Ferrari, so you're getting it because it looks good. You're trying to portray something else. If you're trying to make your business look like it's going to do more, that doesn't matter to an off-market seller. They actually want to make a connection, most of them, not all of them. Most of them want to make a connection. Oh, the one thing I forgot that you were saying before is, if you just take what people are doing with mailers, because you mentioned divorce, probate, let's just talk about foreclosures for a second, or pre-foreclosures. The way that people write letters to pre-foreclosures is embarrassing. 99% of the letters that go out on pre-foreclosures are pre-written to acknowledge that they are pre-foreclosing. Like, what's the one thing that someone who's in pre-foreclosure does not want to talk about? It's the fact that they were late on their payments and they can't support their family. So when you make a call on a pre-foreclosure, you go in the complete other direction. You always say this in this way. Listen, I'm a local investor. I was doing some research. These things are wrong all the time, but I got information from this site that said you might be behind on your payments. This is probably wrong, but I wanted to check with you because a lot of times we help people by buying properties if they're looking to you know, looking in the face of a short sale or something. You've taken the bonus off. You have to acknowledge that you're calling because you've seen it as a foreclosure, but you're telling them, hey, it's probably not true. That's the way that you build a relationship. They might still curse you out, but you're not leading with.
That is so amazing.
Yeah. Imagine though, you're in pre-foreclosure and you know, your spouse or partner doesn't know, and you pick up the phone and you're in the room with them. And the first thing the guy says, hey, I'll buy your house for cash because I know you're about to get foreclosed on. You're basically telling them you can't do anything. You screwed up. You lost your job. You're not being a good person to help them. They're never going to sell the house to you. You can't force them to sell the house to you, even if they are in distress. And if so, it's not a win-win. They're not going to feel good about it. They're not going to, you know, tell their friends, hey, if you're ever in a bind, like this person will buy your house. It's just a different way of thinking. And that's the mindful approach to investing, is thinking more of like, are we all in this together? I'll pay more for a house. I don't care. $5,000 difference. If I pay $5,000 more, that's not going to make or break me. So like pre-foreclosure, just as since we're on that topic, it's a very tight number. So if I know what they, if I know they owe 200 and that's their payout, you got to give them 205. They have to move. So it doesn't matter that you can make 300 or more. Like the point is you have to give them something, but you have the people who are running the numbers and they're like 170 and they're like, well, I owe 200. Like, don't you know how this works? The bank isn't going to get involved unless we're clearing it. And if you can clear it, we're not even going to get to a short sale. We're going to pay it off and be done. So that little, just a little bit of money, which it, not saying that 5,000 is a little bit to everybody in the context of a deal. If I'm hoping to make 60 grand or 100 grand on a flip, I'm not worried about the 5,000. That's going to help them move because you have to get them out if you want to buy the house.
Yeah. If the $5,000 is the make or break for your deal, then you shouldn't be buying that house if it comes down to the $5,000. Yeah,
exactly.
So, I think John, Jonathan, what do you like the way you like approach the pre-foreclosure? I think it's absolutely brilliant. I don't think anybody is doing this. I think it's just the same message. Hey, I know you're in pain. I'm going to take advantage of that pain. You got to sell me the house.
Yeah, they're actually turning the knife harder on them.
Yeah,
it exactly. hurts. You
it
know,
puts them in a defensive situation. Puts them in. Yeah.
Look, same with probate and divorce are also very testy. Yeah. You really want to send a letter, hey, I want to buy your house quick for cash, to the heirs who just lost their parent? That's idiotic. I mean, it's absolutely idiotic. When you're sending letters to an heirs, you come with a very caring sentiment. You still want to buy the house. You have to acknowledge that you are taking advantage of information that you know that somebody just passed away. But you always give your condolences. I know this is a really hard time. I hate to ask this at a time, but this is part of what we do as a business. We try to catch people before they get involved in the probate process and they have the attorneys. Like, if you're ever interested in any help, you know, with the process, or want to talk about all the options of selling because I'm licensed, sometimes it's much better to list the property. Those are the things. And that's just a compassion that honestly I had to learn because I was a rigid kid with a low emotional intelligence, you know, growing up, just because I was like, just kind of like a regular boy or man. Like I thought like, oh, I shouldn't have emotions. But the way that you connect with people is making sure that you're compassionate to their plight. If you're getting a divorce and you're just approaching one party, are you serious? It's like approaching only one heir. Oh, you think you just negotiated a deal because you talked to one partner? Well, it's own 50-50. One person probably doesn't leave. You know, you have to know how divorce works.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so important that that's the approach that you take throughout the conversation. You know, we tell investors that are using Resimply, it's so important to listen to the call recording of your salespeople.
Oh,
it's like such a, like sometimes you're going to cringe and you're going to go back, I cannot believe my salesperson said that. Like, for example, you know, if a seller is saying, oh, you know, my dog died, and you just like completely
go to the next question
and say, go to the next question. I'm like, oh my God, how did you not catch that? How did you not make a note of that?
Generally though, that happens because people don't do role plays. If you hire a VA to do acquisitions calling, you want them in a role play group with other VAs and you want them to say like, listen, this is my general script, but you have to listen. When I was a trial attorney, I never had notes. And I had bullet points. And people would ask me, well, how come you don't write out your questions? I said, watch what happens. And we would go watch a trial where someone write out the questions, and the person would ask them a question, and they would think they would have it down that the person was going to answer this way, and they answer the other way. And then we ask the follow-up question. It didn't make any sense because they just changed their answer and they wouldn't even know. Yeah, and it's the same thing with you know, investors and their plight. Like you're saying, if someone says, you know, oh, I'm the heir, you know, my uncle just died, and you go, how much are you looking for? Like, oh, just punch them in the face. But look, 80 to 99% of calls will go that way.
Will do. And that's where you have the advantage of building a truly meaningful relationship with the seller. You know, it's such a simple thing to do that, but people just overlook it so much.
Yeah, because it's a long-term thing. Yeah. No one wants to work for the long-term gain. They want everything to be short, quick returns, quick for cash, quick for this. That's not how you make the most money. You can stack those on top of each other, but it always ends because it doesn't keep going with that attitude. You will not have any return people or recommendations or easier deals that, hey, if I nurture people and I call them over a year, 12 times, once a month, and I only talk about real estate 4 times, who's going to get the call, me or the person who's hounding them every single month? It's a no-brainer. It's a joke that I have with them where they'll say, hey, you didn't even ask me about the property. And I'll always say the same thing. Bob, I thought we were friends now. I knew that when you're ready to sell, you're going to tell me. I was just checking up to see how you and Sally were doing. But I really mean that. And even if you don't really mean it, learn to have some compassion for what other people are going through, and they will keep calling you back. Maybe it takes 2 years, but that's what's called a pipeline.
Right, exactly.
If everyone was ready.
Yeah, imagine going up against an investor like you who's building that kind of a relationship, and all I'm doing is sending letters, postcards, saying the same thing. Hey, I'll buy it for cash. I'll give you the... Like, it just... there's no way I can compete against you. You have such a huge advantage because you build that relationship. Then when you're negotiating with the seller, I'm sure you've noted, it's not even a price conversation at that point.
No, most of the time I can just tell them in the end, like, just tell me what you want. And I'll tell you, I have sent them for years what it's worth, you know, so they know the data, they know where I'm at. They know, I always tell people, listen, I just want to tell you up front, I'm an investor. I'm also licensed. So if you want market price, I can list your house at any time. We'll do better. You will make more money on the market, but you'll also pay a commission. If you don't want people coming into your home and me showing it to other people, I will buy direct from you, and I'll show you the cash proof of funds on my phone right now, just so you know I'm not faking it. And when you're ready, we can have that discussion. But I'm an investor. I need to be making money on this afterwards. So that comes at a lower price. And that's another honest, mindful approach where they say, who can argue with that? Wait, you just explained that if I want list price, if I want market value, you have an option for that. But I don't want people in the house. I'm a hoarder. So you have another option for that. And it can be on my timeline. The best thing that you have as an investor is time. So if someone says, hey, in 6 months, I'm going to move to Florida, your VAs and callers are going to just say, put a note to call them back in five months and 15 days. The deal's already gone by then because some smart investor came in and said, no problem. Let's lock up the contract now. We'll close then, or let's lock it up now at this price. I'm going to take it for this price, but as a benefit, I'll let you rent it back from me for nothing for the next 6 months. We'll count that and discount it from the price. And that's how you get it for nothing. I mean, these are like just negotiation techniques that VAs can't handle. And that's where sometimes you lose out if you don't train them the right way.
Absolutely. No, I think that's why, like, thinking of it as a relational business, it's going to give you so much more profit than just thinking of it as a transactional business where you send like tens of thousands of dollars in marketing, direct mail and whatnot. And then you get maybe 5 people to call you back, and half of the people that are calling back is, hey, take me off the list. You know, they're just pissed off because they're all getting the same letter and postcard.
Yeah, but like even when you're selling a house on the market, like of course I would like to get the most money, but I actually want to know, you know, a little bit about the buyers. I want to be compliant with fair housing, but I'd like a little information about how much they love the house. Yeah. I don't want to sell it to someone who thinks my house is disgusting. That's silly. People want to trade houses. The older that they are, they want to trade someone who also has an emotional connection. That's why this doesn't work for people who can't really match up to it. again, that's why I can freely give all these things, because not everyone can do it. A very few percentage are willing to put up the time to do it. But instead, they're going to use systems and things that kind of automate everything and have no heart and will never do well enough at scale to make any real money. If they do, they create a system where someone in there is having better one-to-one relationships. And that's how companies can scale, when you have the people who understand that, hey, we're going to move the furniture out, or we're going to junk haul your stuff, or we're going to help you move, or we'll help you find a rental so we can get your renters out. Like, these are what you need to do. You can't just buy every house with cash. It's honestly silly. It's funny.
Yeah, and these are such small value adds for you as an investor, but may mean the whole world to the person that you're buying the property from. I mean, we've done with sellers, we say, hey, we'll pay for the movers, don't worry about it. Just tell us what stuff you want to take with you, and we'll take care of everything else. And they're like, oh, you would do that? We're like, yeah, we would hire the movers. We'll move it to, you know, we give them a radius, like we'll move it within this radius. And they're like, oh, this is absolutely amazing.
It's also the easiest way to balance against who else is in the room. I'm like, I'm at 350. He's like, well, I have an offer for 370. I'm like, well, what are they doing for you? And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you can leave all your stuff in the house. I'll junk haul it. And like, where are you going? They're like, I need like 3 months to find a place. Cool. We'll close today. I'll lease it back to you for 3 months for nothing. But for that, I'll count up the rent. The rent usually here, $2,000 a month. So I'm going to take $6,000 off. Does that sound fair? You get to stay 3 months. I'm going to get the discount. You're good for 3 months, you know, and if I'll help you find a place if you want. These are just tiny little things. And like you said, they're not any real skin off your back. You know, you're not moving a 16 bedroom house. You're moving small houses. It's easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what I love about your approach is always being honest. Then you don't have these games that you're playing in. Hey, wait a minute. What did I tell the seller? What was the nego? You're just always being honest about every single situation. I think that's brilliant. I mean, not just in
but business, isn't that crazy though?
It is.
that's what's funny. Yeah. People always say like, "Oh, I can't believe you're always so honest." And I'm like, I have personality traits that make it so I literally can't. I like cannot lie. But it's just the way that I grew up was like, I don't have to be embarrassed about the truth. Meaning like, if I'm a new investor, I'm going to tell people like, I'm brand spanking new. Like, this is how I'm trying to get started. You know, I want to learn and I like this neighborhood. You know, maybe we can have a talk. That's a real conversation.
Right.
I know I have friends who I coach to write letters like that and would get like a 25, 30% at least callback rate. But again, those are long nurtures.
Yep.
You have to be willing to go over and help them, take the dog out once in a while or do something. But that's called being a good person too. You actually get visceral benefits from helping someone else. And later, maybe you will buy the home. Maybe you won't. You know, what's the biggest deal of that if you've helped someone a few times and then their heirs come in and say, actually, we're going to dispo the house this way. Okay, they will come back to you, because the people who aren't always standing there with the handout are the ones who get the direct calls, which means you're doing less outbound begging, which is what I call it, because I don't do outbound like that. I send stuff and direct them to call me back, and I only respond to people who are going to call who have reached out, even if it's a screw you. We were talking about this the other time. I guarantee you that if you get those FU calls, if you can keep them on the phone, they're much better than you think. Because no one's going to waste the time to call you back just to tell you to screw off because you sent them a marketing piece, unless there was a little bit of them that was a little bit interested in your offer. And if you can break through to say, whoa, are you okay? You know, is there something going on?
I absolutely have to say, I absolutely love that. Are you okay? You know?
Yeah.
Are
you okay is a change in dynamic. It's a Chris Voss technique that takes them from their mental state into like, wait, somebody cares about me, because they probably are not okay.
Right.
Because who's okay if they see some stupid paper and instead of just throwing it out, they actually take the time. I'm going to call this person and I'm going to yell at them for just mailing me something about finding my house on a public records. And I found that that's a big dynamic change. Like, are you okay? Is there something going on? You know, I'm sorry. I run these in the public records. Like, I'm not like stalking you. You can find my information everywhere. This is how the world is now.
Absolutely. Hey, you also had a brilliant technique for newbie investors to use their inexperience to their advantage. Just speak a little bit about that. I thought that was absolutely brilliant what you shared.
Yeah, I love that new investors who can own being a new investor. And also you can use this if you're trying to buy your own house, if you want to renovate it into your own first house, which I think is actually a better technique, but it works more in the caretaker role. You want to focus on people who've lived in their homes much longer because they're more likely to have an emotional attachment to you. So you would be saying your letter would be more in the say, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I see you've lived at 52 Main Street for 50 years. That's amazing. I live in this neighborhood too, and I want to stay here. I'm actually just trying to get started as a real estate investor, and your house is the type of house that I would be interested in buying if you're ever looking to relocate. And then it's like, also, P.S., I always walk by with my dog. If there's anything you ever need help with, you know, just let me know. And if you're sending that to someone who's, you know, over 65, again, is there anything bad in that email? You might get a couple weird, you know, messages back, but I find that to be a very realistic and honest message where you're likely to have a contact. And if you have a contact, then you're open to future contacts. Once they call me and then I have their phone number, they put themselves into my thing. I don't do, you know, cold calling or cold texting because I don't want to violate DNC, which I get a million a day. They're all in violation because I'm on the do not call list. But like, these are just honest approaches. If you're a new investor, you don't have to be not a new investor. Why can't you just be a new investor? Because who wants to sell to a new investor? Someone who wants to help them. And that same new investor can also do it with what we call the I want to be just like you, which is you find somebody in the area who owns 10 or more properties. You write them on one of the properties. Hey, I went by your multifamily at 50 Main Street. It's so cool. I looked you up in the records because I'm good at due diligence. I saw you own 10 buildings in this area. I live in the same town. I just wondered, how did you get to this stage? One day when I get older, I get to be more experienced. I'd like to be just like you. If you ever have 15 minutes to chat, I'll meet you at, you know, we can meet at this local place. Just let me know. No strings attached. I'm trying to get my investing career off the map and I'm trying to learn from people like you. Who's not responding to this? Yeah. Like you have to really want it. If you have that conversation, you might end up with a mentor because someone was asking us on the call, how do I find a mentor? That letter may find you a mentor.
Absolutely. And I think what's so great about this is compared to, you know, some of the other gurus out there telling newbie investors, hey, just, you don't have to tell them you're a newbie investor, just come across or, you know, talk like you've done these. Why?
But you haven't. You
know? Yeah, you haven't. And it's going to, I mean, any reasonable person is going to sense that, you know, but if you approach the situation where you're absolutely honest and say, hey, this is my first deal, I've not done this, but I would absolutely love to, you know, be an investor in this area, and then just use that to your advantage, then there's nothing to hide. Then there's nothing. You're not saying anything that you're not comfortable owning. I think that's a great way to approach, and using that newbie investor, you know, inexperience to your advantage, I think that that's an amazing approach.
Yeah, I mean, it seems crazy though. We were laughing before because it's like, we're just saying, if you're just actually honest about where you're at, you'll probably do better. But that's actually the truth. Because that experienced investor is much more likely to want to help you. And then if you're pretending you're someone you're not, look, investors are smart and they will vet you and they'll use terms to see if you know them. And if you don't know them, the first thing you should say is, I actually don't know what that is. Can you teach me what that is? Then you're developing a relationship instead of just saying yes. And then you can't answer what they're really asking you.
Absolutely.
Because then they know you're faking it.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing is, if you lie about a very, very small, insignificant thing, it creates a doubt in another person's mind. Hey, exactly. What else is he not being honest about? Then they're going to start imagining things that absolutely are unfair to you, but then you don't know. You've actually built that relationship that way by being dishonest about something. And then if I'm on the other side, I'm like, hey, what is this person not telling me? What else do I not know about this person?
And you can't clear that. I mean, if you look at every rom-com movie that's ever made, it's always the same premise. Two people get together, one person doesn't tell them something, and then the other person finds out like too late. Why didn't you tell me that? It was so insignificant. Now I can't trust you about anything.
Absolutely.
That's it. If you didn't tell someone that you were a new investor and kind of pretended like, oh yeah, I have a couple of properties, and then they find out later that you don't, they're not selling you the property. You lied.
Yeah.
And if you go into everything just saying like, I'm going to be wide open about where I'm at. I own two properties. I crapped the bed on one. I tried to do a flip and I didn't know what I'm doing, but I learned a lot. So now I want to take that and put it into this. Who doesn't want to work with that person who's willing to be vulnerable and saying like, Same as we're talking about, you know, people like over-grandizing all their doors. Like, you got to be open about the stuff that you did wrong. No flipper is hitting a home run every time. And if they are, you have a problem. They're not, you know, that's not correct. We all crap the bed at some point. That's investing. You can't be 100%.
Absolutely. Jonathan, this has been absolutely amazing. I want to ask some questions on our next segment of the show where we get to know a little bit more about you. What do you do for fun?
That's a tough one. I'm a very mindful person in general. So my fun is long, aimless walks and meditation. I like sports, but I'm a little older and I got injured like 5 years ago. So now I watch sports, but I love walking. And honestly, this is going to sound crazy to everyone, but it will fit this show. I like watching the clouds move and the grass grow because I can just sit there. And that's just a kind of like peaceful remedy to just watch nature move. And I'll forget about all the deals that I'm not getting.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's absolutely like better. Did you do guided meditation or just like silent guided meditation?
No, yeah, I do three different sets of guided meditation every morning and then one at night, a sleep meditation before bed. And I'm like 7 years straight, haven't missed a day.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. What's the one book that's had the biggest impact in your life? It could be a business book or a personal book, or it could be one of each.
I'm going to give one that I read recently that I absolutely obsessed with. It's called The Wealthy Gardener by John Seforek. It's not a highly well-known investing book. It actually does talk about gardening, but it's about investing. It's one of the best crossovers for the mindful approach to real estate investing. My preferred real estate attorney, Ashley Molson, and my good friend recommended it to me, gave it to me as a gift. We book swapped and I was like blown away. I suggest anyone who's looking to, if they like what I'm talking about, read The Wealthy Gardener. It's a real estate investing book that is built on kind of building a garden. It's pretty interesting and it's a great one. It's off the beaten path. It's not Rich Dad Poor Dad, you know, or some of these other books.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely check it out. Yeah, Rich Dad Poor Dad is so far number one in our
book. It's a great book. I mean,
it's a great book. Yeah, it's a mind shift. Yeah.
It's usually the one that gets you going, but then once you're going and you get to, you know, me, I've been doing this more than 30 years. So I need things that help me balance the practice and look at, you know, what I want in the long term.
Yep. Cool. All right. If you could spend a day with anyone, dead or alive, who would you want to spend the day with and why?
Well, both my parents passed away when I was young at 20 and 33. So that would be an easy one for me. If not them, I would probably just want to go on the Rich Roll podcast or Tim Ferriss, one of those guys. I'd like to be a guest on their podcast. I feel like I'm reaching the level where I would fit in with their audience. So I'd like to have a conversation with both, or Ryan Holiday. I like all of them.
Yeah. I've been reading a lot of the Marcus Aurelius meditation book.
Yeah.
And Ryan Holiday got me started on that.
So yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Then they all three share exactly what I'm talking about. They've been on a journey. They're very mindful approach. And I feel like as interviewers, like, you know, you're interviewing me and I interview a lot of people on my podcast. I want to try to bring out stuff that other people don't have, what you're doing with me. Like, this is not a replication of other shows I've been on. It's completely unique. And that's what, you know, a good interviewer does.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah,
all right, Jonathan, this has been absolutely my pleasure. If someone wants to connect with you, learn more about your journey, what's the best way for them to do that?
Probably Instagram, because I don't answer my phone. Everybody knows that. I'm Trust Green on Instagram, and that's Trust and then Green with an E at the end. And the podcast is Zen and the Art of Real Estate Investing. It's easy to find. My hub site is trustgreen.com, green as an E at the end. And my team is Streamline Properties. We run in multiple states and building big for on-market real estate, working with investors, investor advice, and meetups. And that's at Streamlined with a D dot properties.
We'll put all of that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Jonathan. This has been absolutely amazing.
Really. Thanks, Rod. Really appreciate it. We got two meetups today. So
yeah, after this
good to spend the time with you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.